So man is replacing his chandelier bulb, and he gets up on the table, and his wife gets all excited, and she comes running and says, "With your dirty shoes, here, quickly, quickly, at least put some towels underneath." And he says, "No, it's okay." He says, "I'm high enough, I don't need them." He doesn't have why she wants the towels. A lot of times in the course of life, we're always shooting to try to overtake someone else. We don't understand. Sometimes we have tainus on the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. You know, we're davening and we're not making the $1 million we daven for. And we ask for this and we ask for that. It's not happening. And we don't realize that sometimes the Kaddish Baruch Hu is putting the towels underneath us to protect us. I had a friend many years ago who was married several years and he wasn't blessed with children yet. And he went to Miron on Lag BaOmer and he was mispalo. And he had a machshava. And in his machshava, he said, "If Rabbeinu Shem helps me and I have a son, I'm going to name him Shimon." Well, the Rabbeinu Shem helped him, and his wife was expecting a child. And he was telling everyone this unbelievable mythos, this tremendous miracle. The only one that wasn't very happy about this was his father-in-law. And his father-in-law called him in once and said, "What's this? You're going to name him what?" Said, "I'm going to name him Shimon." I mean, that was the whole thing of Shimon Vayichai was the... He said, "You know that the first name goes to the girl. That's the minig." He said, "Yeah, but like, there wouldn't have been a first name if not for Shimon. You know, there wouldn't have been the first name, wouldn't have been a second name." And he says, "You know, I've been waiting for a name for my father for many, many years." He says, "Well," he says, "the name of this kid's name is going to be, you know, Alexander Zishya Zishya. You understand that? I have nothing against Rav Shimon Vayichai, but you have no right to give away the name." And he's like, "Doesn't he understand? Doesn't he understand? There would have never been a child if not for this." Anyway, things are getting really serious. It looked like it would be a major. And he was scared, you know, he was scared for the child's sake if he doesn't hold his word. So he went to his rabbi and said, "You know, what do I do? What do I do with my father-in-law?" So he said, "I can't talk to my father-in-law. Who else can I talk to?" His rabbi said, "So go talk to Rav Shimon." So go back and tell him what happened. "Don't tell me, I don't know what to tell you." So he went back to Miron and he cried his heart out. And he said, "Listen, Rav Shimon Vayichai, you know, you're the one that performed many nisim and miracles." He says, "I don't know what to do with my father-in-law. You know what to do. You know, you have answers where no one else has answers." Anyway, when the baby was born, surprise, surprise, there were twins. He had two boys. Sometimes when the heartbeats are aligned, and if they don't bother taking a sonogram, the doctors can miss the fact that there is a twin. And there were two brisin at the same time, and one baby was named Shimon, and the other baby was named Alexander Zishya Zishya. So they said, "I knew Rav Shimon would have a solution for this. I happened to know someone that desperately needed a shidduch for his twin girls." And he was crying by Rav Shimon, and cried, and as he left, he had a hergish to also go to Rabbi Akiva in Tveria. We'll soon discuss that. So he cried by Rav Shimon and he cried by Rabbi Akiva, and he promised a tremendous amount of money for tzedakah and all sorts of kabbalas. You know, when you're desperate, you promise everything. And in the course of that year, both of his daughters became kalas, one to a boy whose name was Shimon and the other to a boy whose name was Akiva. So of course, here we run into the issue of Yediyah and Bechira, because Avoyim Yoyim Kodim Yitziris of Lot, 40 days before the baby is created, they already call out Machriz and Bas Ploini Laploini. So we'll address that, hopefully. One more story for now, and this is of a very personal nature. After my father passed away, about 17, 18 years ago, so naturally I wanted very much to have a name for my father. And I had Baruch Hashem, the next year I was Zeicher to a baby girl, and the next year to a baby girl, and the next year to a baby girl, and the next year to another baby girl. I said, "This is getting ridiculous already. We got to do something about this." Just don't get me wrong, Shevach Vaidah to the Rabban Shem for all of them. And after hearing these stories, it was like one of my motivations. I convinced my family that we're going to Miron that year. And I went to Miron, I said, "Look, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not complaining, Chas V'Shalom. You know, I love my family very much, but really, I really would love to have a name for my father. You know, and it has been like five girls in a row. You know, they say there was a man, I told you this, that had 10 girls in a row, and he went to a Rebbe, and he said, 'Rebbe, help me.' The Rebbe looked at the kvittel, he says, 'Don't worry, I promise you, your next child will be a son.' says, you see it on the kvittel? He says, yeah. See it on the piece of paper, wrote my name in. He says, yeah. The guy was so excited. Can't wait. And his wife tells him she's having labor pains. They go. And she has twin girls. So he comes back to the Rebbe. He says, well, what's this? He says, I'm sorry. He said, on your kvittel, I saw the word Beis Nun. He said, I thought it meant Ben. It looks like it was a Rosh Hashanah. It meant Beis Nekevis. You know, you can't, sometimes it's hard to know what you see. All right. So you all know that one. The guy's in the Hadassah hospital. He's in the waiting room, and someone comes out. The doctor tells him, you know, you had seven kids. He's all excited. He says, I live in Be'er Sheva. Another guy comes out. He says, you have eight kids. He's all excited. He lives in Kiryat Shmona. Another guy doesn't even wait. He jumps out and starts running to the street. Doctor says, don't you want to hear what you had? He says, I live in Me'er Sharim. I'm not waiting to find out. He says, okay. What is this kayach about Rav Shimon that people go there? And to a certain degree, their tefillos are answered. And really, I want to say more so than that. What is it about Lag BaOmer that touches the heart and spirit of every single Yid throughout the generations? That literally you have thousands and thousands of people going, walking up a long mountain, and it's a shalomayla midarech hateva that no one gets squashed alive over there. And people pushing in for a couple of minutes, and people are drawn to the place. And who's drawn to the place? Everybody. From people, not from people, Haredi, Svardi, Litvak, Chosid, people that, you know, you would walk on the other side of the street whether you saw them, whether you're justified or not. But Lamaisa, what is the key that draws everyone, to Reb Shimon? What is this power? What is this kayach? When Reb Shimon was in the cave, so he had to run away, right? We all know the story. The Gemara tells us that Yehuda went, and Rabbi Yehuda went, and he said, the Romans are gewaldic, they made these machatzais, they made bathhouses, they made marketplaces, and Rabbi Yossi was quiet, and Reb Shimon said, whatever they did for their own purposes, they made markets just to put zonos in them, to put earlots in them, and they made bathhouses for their own purpose, and bridges for their own tolls, and don't tell me anything nice about the Romans. Incidentally, I saw in the shiurim from Shimon and the Pinkus, he says, why did Reb Shimon see it fit that he was even risking his life to speak against the Romans, and why couldn't he just be quiet? The answer is he knew that there was a terrible kitrig on Klal Yisrael, terrible prosecuting force against Klal Yisrael, because the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva were loy nahagu kavod zeh bezeh, the disciples of Rabbi Akiva who had all passed out because they did not accord each other proper honor. There was not enough concern for a fellow Yid. So Rabbi Shimon said, this is all we need in Shemayim. Now they're going to say the Romans do care for us and the Jews don't care for us. That would create such a terrible prosecution. He felt that he had to take it head on, that he had to challenge it. If not, it would be a terrible kitrug. The Kashnitz Magid in his town once turned around and said, we can't start Kol Nidre yet. They said, Rebbe, it's getting late. We can't start Kol Nidre yet. It's getting late. Finally, he said, is there a Yid from, you know, the town of Zolchka here? They said, no one here from Zolchka. Can we please start Kol Nidre? No, I need that Yid from Zolchka. Finally, some like peasant walks in, you know, boots like walks in. Looks like he flew in from I don't know where. Didn't look very ready for Yom Kippur. He just happened to walk into the Beis HaMedrash. He says, did anyone say Zolchka? He said, come over here. You're from Zolchka. He looked like somebody from Zolchka. And he said to him, your paritz has a dog, doesn't he? And we're saying, like, Rebbe, can we find another time to discuss his paritz's dog like it is before Kol Nidre? He says, yeah, my paritz has a dog. He said, tell me about your paritz's dog. He said, Rebbe, you know, Sipur Tzadikim is a beginning, but like, you know, maybe... So the guy starts saying he has his dog, he loves this dog, unbelievable, and he built a huge 50,000 ruble palace for this dog, and gold a gold plate for him to eat his food in, and he built huge gates around to, then he said he went playing with the dog, he got angry and he shot it. And he bought himself another dog for some prize dog for who knows how much money. So he said, thank you, we can start Kol Nidre. So afterwards, they went over to him. They said, well, you know, what happened here? What was that all about? So he said that there was a Yid in his town that had to marry off a daughter, and nobody was helping him. And the Shidduch was about to break up, and he was going to commit suicide. And he stood by a bridge ready to jump off. And this pirate passed by. He said, why are you jumping off the bridge? He says, my daughter's getting married tomorrow. I don't have the money, and she's threatening to kill herself. I'm just going to kill myself before, and then I give up. No one's helping me. He said, the pirate said, the landowner said, how much do you need for the wedding? He says, he needs 10,000 ruble. He takes it out of his vest pocket, he'll take 10,000 ruble, take another 1,000 for dessert, and goodbye, Zamek Avenged. He said it was such a terrible kitrig in Shemayim, here the Yidden had forsaken him. And this pirate saved him. So he said, I saw it would be a terrible year for Jews. So I wanted to bring out the point that by him, money is not an assayin, and he'll spend 50,000 ruble on his dog and then shoot it the next second because, you know, it didn't bark right. Don't get me wrong. He'll have reward. He'll have his schar for helping the yid. No problem about that. So Rav Shimon said, I can't let this be said about the Romans because Rav Shimon was concerned for what's going on in Shemayim. Okay, so Rav Shimon goes running and he has to hide in the cave, and he's there for a mere 24 years, and then comes Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is standing on the outside of the cave, and he says like this: who is going to tell Rabbi Akiva that the Caesar died and he can come out? So I guess, who's going to tell Rav Shimon bar Yochai that the Caesar died? Man lemer lebar Yochai demes keiser batel gzeros. So he hears that announcement. He says, oh, I can leave now. Now the question is, why does he have to make this announcement as if he's not talking to anybody? Why is it in the abstract? Eliyahu says, now who's going to tell him? Why can't you knock on his door and say, Rav Shimon, great news, you're free? Why does it have to be, who's going to tell bar Yochai? Especially that the Zohar says beferish that Eliyahu HaNavi came and learnt with Rav Shimon and his son in the cave during those 24 years twice a day. All right, they didn't want to talk during Seder. You know, they didn't talk about politics during Seder. Only after learning, he could have told them, by the way, you know, the king died, you're free. Why does Eliyahu come and stand on the outside and speak so abstract? Tzu mimaraschem. So the Ben Ishchai says a davar pella. He says that, first of all, he brings from the Arizal, this is really a Rayel Shtickel from that Gemara Masech Tescholin, whenever one person gives someone else good news, it's nislavish within him a spark of Eliyahu HaNavi. When you're zeichet to give somebody else good news, within you is a spark of Eliyahu HaNavi. And then he says, when Eliyahu HaNavi gives good news, it's permanently good. When Eliyahu will come and be Mevasar the Geula, when Eliyahu will tell us our troubles are over, and people don't have to worry about being sick, and they don't have to worry about terrorists, and there's only life, and there's only bracha, and kindness, and friendship, and all the weapons are going to be turned into plowshares. When Eliyahu will give us that news, it'll be permanently good news. And being that we all know Rav Shimon went out only for 12 months, only for a short while, and then he had to return to the cave for another 12 months, so Eliyahu could not tell him directly, you're free. Because for Eliyahu to tell him directly, you're free, that would have meant indefinitely. And Rav Shimon still had to go back. That's why he had to say it in an abstract way. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai goes out, and he's just spent 24 years learning with Eliyahu HaNavi, eating from this carob, miraculous carob tree, that the Ben Ishchai says was man, like the man in the Midbar, and drinking from the water, which was like the Be'er Shel Miriam, and surrounded by the cave, which is like the Anani HaKavod, 24 years of pure Kiddusha, doesn't have to look at anything Tameh. He walks out, he sees this guy plowing, he says, are you out of your mind? You're plowing, you know what Olam Haba is all about, you're wasting away your life, and the whole world's burning up. So Hashem says to him, what are you doing? What are you doing? You came out to destroy my world? Go back to your cave. They go back to their cave. What does that mean, go back to your cave? What made it his cave? Did he purchase the cave? Did he acquire the cave? Did he get it as a grant from the Roman government? What is it? What made it his cave? Shouldn't the Lashon be go back to the cave? Why is it go back to your cave? The answer, perhaps, is as follows. We mentioned before Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, as we know, is buried in Tveria. Rabbi Akiva is buried next to the Mesillas Yesharim, incidentally, mamish side by side. The Velt says of art, the Mesillas Yesharim was nifter when he was 42 years old, 40. No one knows exactly, but within that range. He came to Eretz Yisrael after a very, very difficult life, and he passed away right away. And they say that the first 40 years of Rabbi Akiva's life, he was an Amma Aretz. So the Mesillas Yesharim was a Gilgal of Rabbi Akiva, and the 40 years of his life was a tikkun to the first 40 years of Rabbi Akiva's life, and that's why he's buried right next to Rabbi Akiva. But the question is, it is well known that when the Romans executed someone, they did not release the body out of concern that a revolution would gather, or a movement would gather against them around the body. They didn't even tell anyone when the person passed away or if he passed away. They would dispose of the body. So how does Rabbi Akiva come to be buried in Tveria? And how do we know where it is if the Romans kept it a secret? We know the Romans executed Rabbi Akiva. So the Medrash says as follows. Ma'isa b'Rabbi Akiva, there was a story b'Rabbi Akiva, sheyachavish b'veis v'asurim, who was in prison. Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi Talmidei Hayom Mishamshi. Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi served him. It was Erev Yom Tov. He said goodbye to his dear Rebbe, left him in prison, and he had to go home. When he came home, Bo Eliyahu Va'amad Al Pesach Beisa Shel Rabbi Yeshua. Eliyahu came and stood by the doorway of Rabbi Yeshua. Amaloi Eliyahu. Eliyahu said to Rabbi Yeshua, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi. Shalom Alecha, Rabbi Amori. Can I help you? So Eliyahu says, well, I'm a Kohen. And I came to tell you Rabbi Akiva died. He was nifter. He was killed in prison. A horrible death. And miyad holchu shneim lebeisu asurim. The two traveled back to the prison right away. Imatsu as Pesach Shar Beisu Asurim Pesuach. Miraculously, they found the door open. V'sar Beis HaSoyer HaYayoshim. And the Sar Beis HaSoyer was taking his afternoon nap. V'chol Am Shehoye BeBeisu Asurim HaYishenim. Basically, everybody else was sleeping also. Typical government, office. V'shkivu as Rav Yekiva Al Amita. They put Rav Yekiva down on the bed. V'yotsu when they left. And Eliyahu was also helping along. So Rabbi Yeshua said, you told me you're a Kohen. What are you doing? Kohen can't be metam himself to a mace. So he said, Chayecha Rabbi Yeshua b'ni, chas v'shalom. There's no tumah by tzaddikim, not by them, not by their talmidim. They carried him the entire night until they came to Trapilon shel Kisorin, certain place. Kivan shegiu l'sham, when they got there, they went up three steps, and they went down three steps, and suddenly a cave opened up in front of them. The niftach hamayra lifnayim. And they saw inside a chair, a table, and a menorah. And they put their Rabbi Akiva on the bed and they left. As soon as they left, Rabbi Yeshua noticed that the opening to this cave sealed and the candles flashed on to light. And Eliyahu Novi made a comment. He said, Ashreichem tzadikim, v'ashreichem amolei Torah. How fortunate are you, tzadikim? How fortunate are you, those that work hard to learn? How fortunate are you, Yirei Elokim, that you, what your place is in Gan Eden, the whole world lights up around you. And they dash in the pasuk in Mishlei af archa shulchana, that your table and your beautiful suite is ready for you in Gan Eden. Normally, the term Myra, or the term cave, represents a place where in the times of Chazal they buried people. The Ma'ara Samachpela. By Tzadikim, the Ma'ara was used, they were buried in a cave. The word Ma'ara, cave, also means Irui. Irui means a connection. Like when you pour from one water, you pour from a Klisheni into a Klirisha, and a Klirisha into a Klisheni, it's called Irui. Ara means a connection. It's the connection between this world, it's like the exit door into the world to come. A Myra normally means that Tzaddik has fulfilled his life. Aaron HaKohen is buried in the Myra. It's like an elevator. Picture it like an elevator. They go into this Myra, the door closes, he goes up to Gan Eden. Rav Shimon had a very different kind of a Myra. Rav Shimon was almost killed by the Romans. The Rabbanu Shalom protected him. For all practical purposes, he was kind of killed by the Romans. Some of the Mefarshim say one of the reasons the Romans could not find him is because Rav Shimon, in essence, had elevated himself to a different sphere, to a different world. He wasn't there. He wasn't there at all. Which explains why originally the Gemara says Rav Shimon ran and hid in the base of Medrash. Now you would think it's a pretty foolish place to hide if you were Rav Shimon. If the Romans are looking for you, like it's pretty much the first place they would look for him. But Rav Shimon had an ability to be able to disappear even within this world, into the confines of the Beis Medrash. His concern only was his wife, that there would be Messiah, his wife. So he disappears into this cave, and really he was an Olam Haba. And as far as they were concerned, they were an Olam Haba. After a certain amount of years, they're told, leave. I gotta leave Olam Haba? Back down to this world? Why? So Hashem says, Rav Shimon, you know why I saved you? Because I want you to teach the people of this world there's something called Olam Haba. That this world isn't it. It's not so, don't get so terribly excited about this world. Don't panic about it. It's just a temporary world. Do what you have to do. It's a Pesach for a greater world. I want to give you the Sefer HaZoyer. I want to reveal to you the secrets of Neshamas. I want you to give a people a touch of the Or HaGanis, of the hidden light of Maaseh Bereishis. Your cave is different than all other caves. All caves is the elevator where the tzaddik goes up to Olam Haba and it's over. Your cave is go up to Olam Haba and this elevator comes back down. get out and help the world. That's why he was told, go back to your cave. Wait a second. Your cave is different than the cave of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had his Mesiras Nefesh during his lifetime, then he has his cave, is elevated to Olam Haba. Your cave is a training ground. You have to come back down here. So Rabbi Akiva comes out of his cave, and he's so angry, he says to people, what are you doing? What are you wasting your life? Don't you know what Olam Haba is? And Hashem says, you got it all wrong. I took you out of the cave, not to schlep people into Olam Haba. I took you out of the cave to help people find Olam Haba within the context of their lives. Told you the story already, I think, of a person who had a daughter was not well, and he was trying to get through to a doctor in America, and he didn't have insurance, and he didn't have money, he didn't have anything. And there was one person who worked with doctors in Yerushalayim, and then he moved to Bnei Brak, and he was trying to get a hold of him, and he couldn't get a hold of him, and he tried to get an appointment, and meanwhile his daughter was withering away, and he was desperate, and he was trying with Protexia, and finally he got a call. The man is available, come to Bnei Brak now, you have to be here within an hour. He jumps into the first taxi. He says, get me to Bnei Brak in an hour. The guy tells him, Chavivi, impossible. He gives him 300 shkolim. It becomes possible. The rocket ship takes off. They take off zigzagging, driving through streets, turning, garbage cans flying, through roads, through farms. And Mamish risking his life, burning tires, smoke coming out of this overheated little Peugeot, this little taxi, screeches to a stop, half dead, half alive, terrified, never mind everyone else on the road. He opens up the door, and all four, he climbs up the stairs, he sees he made it by 5 minutes, bangs on the door, and the secretary comes out and says, oh, I'm sorry, he had to leave. We thought he'll be here for the next hour. And he goes, I can't believe it. You know what I just went through? He's going to faint. I'm going to faint. Bring me a cup of water, please. And they bring him a cup of water, and he starts saying, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nibrah. And as he's making this bracha, he begins to say, you know, God, you're so gevaldik. I don't need protexia to get an appointment with you. You don't need special considerations. I don't have to put yourself onto a list, on a waiting list. At any time, I pick up a cup and I say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Hashem, you're here. He says, forget all the askanim. Forget all the people that are working. Hashem, it's just between me and you. Help me. Comes home, he finds out there's a drastic change to the better in his daughter. And as time goes on, the medical care that he desperately needed didn't seem necessary anymore. Miraculously, 1 out of 1,000 that this disease was cured on its own. He says it was that shahakal that did it. His wife said, a shahakal! You could have made a shahakal here, you would have saved 300 shkolim! Says, I could have never made that shahakal over here. Rav Shimon teaches us, you come out of the cave. Hashem says, I don't want you to scream at the guy going to Olam Haba. I want you to let the guy know at the worst time in his life, when he's plowing and the world is caving in, there are malachim looking down at you. You can make a shahakal. I want you to connect Olam Haba down here to this world. We all know the famous Shira Bar Yechai. Who made this Shira? A Yid by the name of Rav Shimon Levi, or Lavoi. He lived in the middle centuries. And an interesting story. He was coming from North Africa to Eretz Yisrael. It was his life dream to settle in Eretz Yisrael. And he was on the ship, like all good stories with ships in the Middle Ages, either there's a storm or there's pirates, he was zeichet to both. And he wound up in Tripoli, and they redeemed him. And he rested up, and he was ready to leave. And he came into shul Friday night, and he noticed that they're davening the weekday Shmon Esrei Friday night. He says to them, what's this? He said, they only have weekday Sidurim here in Tripoli. He says, hey, you know, there's a Shabbos Shmon Esrei, what's with you people? So one of the people turns around and says, don't scream at us. Who's here to teach us? You're not going to stay here. So what do you want from us? And he sat down and he made a cheshbon. He said, what does Hashem really want me to do? What would Rav Shimon want me to do? His life dream was to go up to Miron. That was one of the reasons he gave everything away and risked his life to go to Eretz Yisrael. But these people need me. He made a decision. He's calling it quits as far as his trip is concerned. He stayed for the rest of his life in Tripoli, put up a yeshiva and raised a beautiful dar. But a friend of his that went, he sent the Shira of Bar Yechai with him. What's amazing is that Shira was accepted to this very day. It's one of the very few songs that you see that it's almost universal. We keep the same tune, the same niggun, right? Every other song in the world is a trillion different niggunim. Everyone, vision is Bob, you know, Sered vision is Bnei Brak vision is, everyone has a different niggun, a different kvetch at least for the niggun. Same niggun. Because that's the koyach of Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon is ma'ached. And this Rav Shimon Levoi, by doing exactly what Rav Shimon was all about, he came from Gan Eden, he was on his way to Gan Eden, to Eretz Yisrael, in the middle he was out of the cave, and Hashem says, what's your purpose on this world? Get out there and reach out to someone. Teach people how to be happy in Tripoli. In the Shir of Bar Yochai, what do we say? We say, Naaseh Adam Nemar Bavarecha. I would say I don't sing good now because I'm hoarse, but the truth is I'm not much better when I'm not hoarse. Naaseh Adam Nemar Bavarecha. What does that mean? Api Pashtus, it means that humanity, it was worth it to create humanity because of you. Naaseh Adam. That Hashem said, let us make man. It's all worth it just for Rav Shimon. That's very nice. In fact, Rav Shimon Pinkus, what about Moshe and Aaron and Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov? Isn't it a little bit of a bazillion? It wasn't worth making the world for them. So he explains, what does the word Adam mean? Adam is a combination of two things. Aleph is from the word Pella. How do you spell Aleph? Aleph, Lamed, Fe. Pe, Lamed, Aleph. Aleph means the neshama. Before this Bria, the Torah begins with a Beis. Aleph is the neshama that was created before the physical Bria Sa'olam. The Dalet Mem is the blood, is the dam of the person. We say when we make an Asher Yotzar, Asher Mafli Lasos. What is the Pella? So the Mishnah Berurah says, a human being is a sack, Molei Ruach, and imagine like a big balloon, and you're full of holes, and the wind doesn't go out. That's the Nes. I mean, the truth is, we taka full of ruach, and we taka have holes. But the holes aren't connected to the ruach, right? If someone has a hole in his lung, and the wind does go out. So what's the mafli lasis? So Reb Shimshon says it means something else. He says, if I called you in and I gave you a disc, you know, I was telling it to my class, this marshal, I said, around this, they're all laughing at me. Your discs aren't around anymore, Rebbe. I said, well, it used to be that way, okay? If I gave you a disc, you put it into your computer, and I said, program in 100 numbers. You can do that, right? I can't, maybe you could. Next. If I gave you a pot of water and raw spaghetti, and I told you, cook spaghetti, so you can do it. Again, some of us could. But if I gave you a computer disk and I said, cook spaghetti with it, or I gave you a pot and I said, program names into it, you'd have a hard time. You'd be hard-pressed to do that. He says, the guf and the neshama, what's the binding? What's the glue? What keeps it together? There's nothing here that should keep it together. It doesn't make sense that the neshama stays in the guf. It has no shaychus. No shaychus to each other. The teretz is that Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah down to this world and he connected the Adam. However, he connected it for a dar day. He connected it for people that were in the midbar, great tzaddikim. We still don't know how to connect it. We have no shaychus to it. Rav Shimon bar Yochai went a step further and he said, what Moshe and the Avos did was, they took the dam, they took the guf, and they lifted it up to the neshama, and therefore it was able to stay together. What about those people that have sunk so low, their bodies don't lift? Rav Shimon bar Yochai went and he brought the Torah down into the Gashmias and said, wherever you are, think and learning. And one of my Rebbeim once said, you know, there's a din if someone's sitting in the bathroom. Rahman, now to think about Torah in the bathroom. You know, there's a din if someone has bad machshavos in the bathroom, and the only way he feels he can save himself from the bad machshavos is thinking about Torah. He's allowed to think about Torah even there. It's a mashal that the Rabbi Nishalem says, I'll jump into the sewer for you. Anything to save you. Think how the Rabbi Nishalem loves us. This is the koyach of Rav Shimon. I'm going to bring the loftiest of Torah to every single yid. It's accessible to anyone. That's why it says, Nasa Adam Nemar Bavurecha. For you, even your dam, which is so low, so cooked in chait, it could even connect to Aleph. That was the power of Rav Shimon. Now you should know something. That the Chassam Sofer held that we overdo it a little bit with Lag BaOmer. The Chassam Sofer even said in the 1800s there was a terrible earthquake in Tzfas. And the Chassam Sofer said it was because Yerushalayim was jealous. Everyone's running only to the north, and there was a bezayin on Yerushalayim. And the Chassam Sofer asks, Zayin Adar is Latinus for many people. Since when is the yard side of Rav Shimon bar Yochai? Why does that become singing and dancing? So the Shai Yisoscha writes, it's not a bezayin to Moshe, because Rav Shimon bar Yochai is the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is Gematria 345. Lag ba'omer is gematria 3, 4, 5. Lag ba'omer always falls out on the same day as this coming year Sukkis, the Ashpizin of Moshe. In other words, the first day Sukkis is Avram, second day Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David. That means Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, the fourth day of Sukkis is going to be on a Friday, this upcoming year. There's a connection between Lag Ba'omer and Moshe. Because Moshe made the initial connection, but it was beyond our reach. It was like, you know, I pulled the shade down to the point it's in the room. Rav Shimon pulled it down for each and every one of us to touch. He says, how come Paroi couldn't learn Hebrew? He knew 69 other languages, but by the time you know 69 languages, usually you can do the 70th also. It's the second language that's hard. Some people, if you grow up in Brooklyn, the first language is hard also. But it's the second language that's hard. So what does it mean Paroi didn't know? Why couldn't he pick up one of those tapes, you know, speak Hebrew in 4 hours, you know, one of those things? Why couldn't he do it? The Rogatchev once said that if you gave him any dictionary, bilingual dictionary, he could speak that language fluently in 3 hours. So they ask him, why does he only speak Yiddish? He said he never had 3 hours in his life. Somebody told me, what's the connection between Bein Hazmanim and Tisha B'Av? And I said, I give up. He says three things. You walk around in slippers the whole day, there's no learning, and you put on tefillin mincha time. A little different in the Rogatchev's times. Okay. So the inyan is that Paroi couldn't connect. Because the concept of neshama to guf, kedusha to guf, didn't work yet. The avos lifted themselves up to the madrega. But Rav Shimon bar Yochai makes the Torah available for us. He gives every yid, regardless of what you did, a license to learn and a license to hold on to him. And therefore it says, Mishi yesh lo yamuna b'Rav Shimon bar Yochai, yesh lo chizik k'Rav Shimon bar Yochai, the Beis Aaron says. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai in particular reaches out to every single person and we're drawn to him. And it's the hachana to Kabbalah Satayra. We, says the B'nai Yisrael, cannot access Shavuos without Lag Ba'omer. Because there has to be some middle point where the neshama and guf meet. And our guf just doesn't go high enough to reach. We can't reach it. It's Rav Shimon bar Yochai that comes Lag Ba'omer and paves the way by Shavuos by pulling the Torah down to us. Connecting it to us. And that's why Rav Shimon is Megala de Or Hagonis, the hidden light. When Hashem created the world, there was a hidden light of Maisa Bereishis. What does this light mean? It means a sense of simcha. A sense of perception, this world is nothing. You know, all those studies about those people that have the post-death experiences. So they say they died and they were resuscitated, so they all describe this light. They're calling it a light, they say, because they have no other way of describing it. But in reality, there's no such thing on this world. So imagine this kind of a light that would solve all of your daigus. I have no daigus, no problems. Rav Shimon says you can find it. If you really want, you can connect in the most ridiculous time. When you're about to give up and you make a shahakal, you can connect to the Or HaGanis. Vayara lekinas ha'ar ki toiv. What is toiv? 17. How many days are left from Lag Ba'omer until Shavuos? Says the B'nai Yisrael, 17 days. Because this gives us, it's, if Shimon says, come on, reach out, don't give up, make that shahakal. You could connect. You can do it. Conclude to the following story. It was a Yid who suffered through the concentration camps. 1,000 times he wanted to touch the wire and give up and just go up in smoke. He didn't want to. Somebody encouraged him, you'll live, you'll see, we have a life ahead of us. They made it outside of Eretz Yisrael and they made it, they survived the war. They were liberated by the British army. He tried to make it to Palestine. He was cut off by one of the British naval ships that blockaded. He ran, the British officer grabbed him, he ripped his shirt off, ripped his clothes off, and that's how he swam, jumped off and swam on the Mediterranean and jumped off on the beaches of Tel Aviv and Haifa, and with bullets shooting over his head, ran into Eretz Yisrael. But he came during a time of war. And when he signed up with the Jewish agency for food or something, I'm here, and he says, I didn't get food, they gave me a rifle. And they said, go on the attack on Latrun. Latrun was a military base up high on a mountain that at that time, the only road to Yerushalayim had to climb that mountain, and the Yerushalayim was blockaded. They couldn't get any food in. And the Agana tried to take Latrun 3 or 4 times, each time with devastating effects. He said, I don't know what hit me. I came here for food. I can't believe it. Through the concentration camps, I'm not a soldier. What are you giving me a gun for? You know, give me a medical exam. I'm not worthy to be a soldier. They gave me a medical exam. They said, breathe. You passed. Go. So he's on this jeep. He's on his way up to Latrun. And boom, he's an explosion. Doesn't know what hit him. And the next thing he wakes up, he's in Hadassah Hospital. And the doctors are shaking their heads. And they tell him, listen, I don't know if we could help you, but we're going to have to amputate your leg. He says, what? He says, listen, we tried to connect it. It's not going. We don't get the circulation. We want to save your life. He says, you want to cut off my leg? I'd rather you cut off my head. He said, don't be ridiculous. He said, listen, I'm the only surviving member of my family. Nobody will ever marry me without a foot. Forget it. I have no reason to live. I'm not signing the permission. They said, there's a war going on. There are bleeding people, wounded people being brought in every second. We don't have time for you. We want to save your life. You don't want his nish. They walk away. And he's tossing and turning in bed in pain. He goes, I can't believe it. This is what I lived for. I don't know what hit me. And then these two Yerushalmis walk into the hospital. Now, Yerushalmis, as you know, are like a breed on their own. Different metzias of people. They come over to him. They say, what are you crying about? He said, what am I crying about? I just left the concentration camp. Now they want to cut off my leg. It was right before Lag BaOmer. He says, you know, why don't you come with us to Rav Shimon? Why? He says, I told the doctors I should cut off my head. It looks like somebody cut off your head already. what are you talking about? You know, the husband says to the wife, you know, the kids are very smart. They must have gotten my brains. She says, probably, because I still have mine, she said. You know, I'm laying here in bed. I can't move. How am I supposed to go to Rav Shimon? We'll take you. They'll never let me out of the hospital. We know how to get you out of the hospital. These two guys work for the Chevra Kedisha. They roll in this stretcher. They pick him up. What are you doing? Ouch! They put him on. They cover him with a sheet. And they start rolling out. And everyone stops and never takes off their hat and salutes. And meanwhile, they're wondering why they're fighting to keep this guy under the sheet down. He's like pushing a little bit there. They're saying, you know, it's okay. Just a lively one, you know. And they take him out. And I wonder if this wasn't Eged coach air-conditioned buses in those days. There was a windy, dusty dust road with Arab snipers on both sides of the mountain. And they put him on some type of a pickup truck that had four different sized tires. And no seat belts, and he's in excruciating pain. He says, you people are out of your mind. And they drive him to Miron. And they make it after a very long and difficult trip. And when they come in, they put him down in the middle. And it was the war years. There weren't the hundreds of people there, but there were people there. And he overwhelmed the site. You know, the Rishonim once said, somebody explained to him that in Miron, right outside, is Simchas Torah. Everyone's dancing and laughing. And you take one step in, people are crying their hearts out. It's Yom Kippur. It's like simultaneously Yom Kippur and Simchas Torah at the same time. They put him down, and these two Yerushalmis say, okay, we're going to check out some of the other kvarim in the neighborhood, you know, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Lo, the other places. We'll be back. He said, don't leave me here alone. You're not alone. You're with Rav Shimon. And he's laying over there, and he's crying his heart out. And suddenly, a bunch of people come in, and they start dancing. And one of them says, well, you don't join us to dance. Don't come near me. And they physically lift him up. He says, I can't. Come on, try. And slowly they're like schlepping him in this circle, and his foot goes down, he's in excruciating pain. And as they're dancing, slowly but surely, you know, somehow he was still in pain, but he was managing. And then these two original Yerushalmis come back, and they're kind of watching him dance. And they put him back on the pickup truck, and they were dancing a lot on the way back, as the truck is lurching and inching its way. They come back to Hadassah, again they cover him with the sheet, he's fighting off again, they come rolling in, they say, it was a mistake, he's back. And they put him onto the bed, and the doctors come in, they say, get ready for the surgery now. Where were you the last 3 days? Where were you hiding? He says, I was in Miron. Yeah, right, what else? He says, do me a favor, doctors, take one more x-ray. One more x-ray, please, please. So they open up his, they take the x-ray, and they look at it, and they say it's a mistake. They must have mixed it up with someone else's x-ray. They said the circulation started in his leg. They can't believe it. What did you do? He'll never believe me, and may as well not tell you. And Lemaisa, he got married, and he has children, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Terrible limp all of his life, but he got to keep his foot. The inyan of Rav Shimon is the impossible. So you ask Akasha, if his wife had twins, and he went to Rav Shimon, those twins were conceived as twins. They were both born together. If he found two sons-in-law, one is Shimon, one is Akiva, that's Arbaim Yoim Kaidim Yitzirus of Lad, Machriz and Bas Ploini Laploini. What does that have to do with Rav Shimon? Teretz is, Rav Shimon is not Machadish anything new. But the koyach of Rav Shimon is to come out of the cave and show you in your world, in your life, where you think the world's caving in on you and you want to give up. Take a deeper look and you'll see Elio Anavi. Take a deeper look and make the shahako. The koyach of Rav Shimon is not to create something new. The koyach of Rav Shimon is to show you the Yeshua in where you are. And therefore, every person, regardless of how low he is drawn and is connected to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And if we're not there in place, we can be there in time. We can be there in our tefillos in Lag BaOmer. We can be there by being mispal for someone else on Lag BaOmer. We can be there by giving tzedakah on Lag BaOmer. Or simply on Lag BaOmer, making a shahakal and saying, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, as low as I have fallen, I know I can reach out to the Imbechikaisai Telechu, because regardless of how deep low I am, I know Rav Shimon pulled the shade low enough that I'm able to hold on to it.